bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. It's the big show. Yes, we're here. Stuff it, we'll get started. And we're nearly on time, we're only 12 minutes late. Yes! It's a new record. No technical errors as yet, but give it time, we could get there. We're discussing the week's technology. Oh, no, hang on, who's... someone's got the volume turned up. We're here to discuss the week's technology, such as it's been, and I've got a fantastic panel, wonderful group. I hope they got something to say, though. Top left, it's Jimmy Boy Hart. How you doing, sir?
I'm well, thank you very much, Ewan. I do apologise for any quality issues I might be facing this evening. I put a router in the bin earlier, and I think the network is having its revenge.
Well, you certainly haven't got a straight-in connection, have you? Gordon Bennett.
I'm not connected to Telehouse, my friends.
It's not good, it's not good. But we'll manage through, don't worry. Good week?
Very good week. Unfortunately, though, my evenings have been somewhat distracted. There's this... I managed to record a drama serial called The Bridge. It's one of these sort of Swedish overdubbed crime dramas. And it is just addictive. And I've been watching them sort of one after the other, getting to bed at 12:30 and wake up quite tired the next day. But it really is. If you get a chance, I didn't get it on DVD or if it's really shown, very worth, well worth watch if you like your crime dramas and your very strange police women.
Should have saved that for a cool thing, mate.
Oh, I've got an in cooler cool thing.
Oh, okay. Probably. Right. Next to James making a welcome return, Mr. Ian Burton. How you doing, pal?
Fine, thank you.
Ace programmer in C#.
Most of the time.
And how have you been, mate? Good week?
Good week, hasn't it? I'm programming, which is something I've not done for a while. Makes a change from talking.
Ah, well, good. Enjoy. Beneath him, the man is becoming a regular. He's becoming a regular on this show. Oh, last minute regular.
I'm a regular substitute.
Regular substitute. Our man who stands by and saves our bacon every week. Alex G. Fox, how you doing, mate?
Very well.
You've changed.
I apologise for the quality of anything I may say as well. And there's nothing wrong with my router.
And last but by no means least, Eriklanigan.
That's me.
Eric Lanigan, how you doing, mate?
Good, how are you?
I'm great, pal. Yeah. How's life been over there?
Uneventful.
Yes. You've got a thing going on over there. I think there's a Mac conference-y type thing going on at Burbank, because we spoke to Kelly earlier. She's over there. Never mind, eh? The Week in Tech. But before we do that, just a quick couple of announcements. First one, we've got a guy called Paul Kirkle, who's been a great friend to the network. He's an artist, and he does all of his artwork on iPads. Very, very talented. He's done a lot of stuff for the London Mac User Group with some of the events that we've done for launches and that kind of thing. He's done posters. He did a whole pile of posters and a whole pile of drawings for the bash last year. He was the guy with the big ginger beard. He's asked, could we plug something for him? He is the artist in residence at Comic-Con, which is from the 26th to the 28th of October. There's a whole bunch of them going from his university, and they'll be at London Comic Con. And then on November the 3rd and 4th, they're the iPad resident in residence, the iPad artists in residence, sorry, at the Barbican in London. And in February 2013, they're iPad artists on the stage at BET. Don't know what BET is, but there we go. So if you can go along and say hello, then please do, because he'd really appreciate you saying hello and making him look good.
Splendid, hey. Splendid.
Thank you, Paul, for all your support this year and all the artwork that you've done and everything. And before we get started on the stories, I'd just like to point out that when we get cool things and that type of stuff, I tend to buy them, because I think, you know, people have recommended them. They must be pretty cool. And generally, and some of them I've even bought before the cool things are finished. And that's exactly what happened last week. I bought... because I thought it was the first time we'd done a chat cool thing. I bought Batwench's cool thing. There you go. What do you think? I think it's cracking.
Your ears warm, weren't they?
Well, I tried to buy one that I thought would fit, so I bought 46G. And it does fit. I mean, it fits me head. It's huge. There we go. I look like one of those surfs, don't I? Or it could be a ninja. There we go.
you were a Siamese twin, that would be a really useful
hat. That would be great, wouldn't it? It'd be a great hat for the two of us. But there you go. That was Batwinch's pick last week. I thought it was great. $16.99.
Well, if you'd bought one, I would have bought one for myself as well. This is outrageous.
Well, the link's in the chat room. So it's Batwinch says she's only a 40, but I was never going to get in a 40. I got a 52-inch chest. So there we go. We'll all get one now, and we'll wear it for the next podcast. There
you,
we go.
You
on the outside.
American football, didn't you?
I did.
They look like shoulder pads.
Oh, hang on. There we go. Linebacker.
There you go.
Right.
What was $16.99. What was Sharon's reaction when that arrived?
I am married to the coolest woman in the world, mate. She thought it was hilarious. There we go. Superb. Brilliant. Maybe Ewan can cut his in half and send one the other one to James, and we can wear him as hats. That would be a great idea. Superb. $16.99 on eBay. And the bastards, I've got nothing but promotional email since. I only bought it last Thursday while she was going on about it in the chat room, and we were talking about it. I was purchasing it online.
That is an impulse buy.
And I must have had 20 frigging emails from them, the bastards.
Yeah, but what sort of impulse?
SM2 says I could use it as a codpiece. No, I really couldn't.
Ooh, what are you saying, sir?
Maybe a fishing net.
The week in tech. The hot news is that Google's had a slap from... that's a Getty Images thing there that I've stolen. So, Getty, if you want to come get me, come get me. We don't make any money. Google have had a slap from the EU over their privacy settings. And just as we've come on air, they've actually had a bit of a problem.
An oopsie.
Yes, their shares have been suspended from the stock market because of the fact that their results have been leaked and their results are badly down. EA isn't doing so well because it released a code that said if you got one of our games, you reply to a survey and you can have one of our games free. So they sent out a code and everyone downloaded it. And then they realised that they could use the code over and over and over again, so they stole all the games. And I'm pretty sure that is theft, actually. Shopping carts and online stores have had a bit of a kicking from the EU here as well this week. They're saying, it was the OFT, Office of Fair Trading. They've said that a lot of online retailers don't comply with the rules from the distance selling regulations. Gary McKinnon is not on his way to the States. We'll have a chat about that one in a minute because I think we might have a few diverse opinions there. And the Raspberry Pi has got 512 meg of RAM in it, or gig of RAM.
Oh, that was annoying. It barely limps along with 256 meg. It's like, you know, like your Android.
But it's still only 35 quid, mate.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm going to have to get another one now, aren't I?
Yeah, version 2. Well, don't feel apparently, so bad. I've just bought two GoPros, mate, and they've just released GoPro 3.
Oh, no, literally this
4 weeks. Yeah, shut up. Right, okay, there we go.
But if you put yours together, you get a GoPro 4.
And I wish. And the only other thing that's really brand new and can't be superseded, don't worry, you won't have the previous version of this, is the Microsoft Surface. It's been confirmed. It's definitely coming out. They've tried to beat Apple with a little leak, and it's £499 for a 32-gig one, which is good price, I think.
And only $130 for the keyboard.
You're kidding me. Is it
no,
really?
That's the real price.
It's not pretty.
Let's start with Google. Then Google's had its shares suspended. They've had an issue. I need to find the story now because I've lost it. I took it off.
While you do that,
sorry, is anyone else hearing like traffic noise from someone's microphone?
Yeah, I can hear wind.
There is a bit of Ian. Is that you?
No.
Oh, it'll come off in the edit. Don't worry. Google's shares are suspended after profit results error. Trading in Google shares has been suspended after the internet giant released its third quarter results early. By mistakes. And unfortunately, the profits had fallen by 20% from to 2.18 billion. So that's well down. Their shares suddenly took a plummet. They were down 10.5% at one stage and were suspended at 9% below the trading standard that they're starting at. And also, there was a section left open saying pending Larry quote, which refers to Larry Page, chief executive. The firm that's been has been blamed with this is R.R. Donnelly, who are a bunch of financial printers, apparently.
Used to be.
used to be. That's a pretty big blow, is it not, for Google? I mean, they're...
They do a lot of stumbling about, Ewan. They do a lot. This is something that a company that is really good at what they do would never allow to happen.
No.
The fact is, they've got... Right, the profit... slump is slumping down to 20%.
Yeah.
that's still quite a lot of growth. But still, I mean, how on I suppose when you've got when you're a company that size, the propensity for a leak or an accidental slip is much greater. But no, there's not enough control there, is there?
No, I'm not entirely sure why though. It's an issue. I mean, it's an issue that it's come out early because it shows their inability to control information. But their share price hasn't dipped on their inability to control private information. It's dipped on the fact that they're having a crap year, same as an awful lot of other companies. But I mean, it's come out a few days early. But why does it have to? No one's making, unless anyone's making money on the fact that it's going to drop or something, and those stock shares ready to sell after.
Yeah, well, that's Apple the point. You have shares that are ready to go after a dividend or whatever it's been called. You know, once that share price comes out, then the people with preferential shares and everything will get paid out of after that point. And that point, that date was set for whenever it is, the 20th or the 21st, or I don't know what it was, whenever it was supposed to be. So you've got all these people holding shares that, you know, are not going to be worth the value that they expected them to be on the 22nd, but they've got a heads up now because they can't be paid out on until a date. And that's why the call is at that date.
Mm.
But it's been called early. All these people are going, get rid of them, get rid of them. I mean, the thing is, get rid of them, get rid of them. But those preferential shares aren't going to be 20% less value just because they've not made so much profit. So now's a really great time to buy them. And that's why they've suspended it.
Mm.
Because you've got a big drop. And then all of a sudden, people are going to go, right, it's dropped past what it's worth to buy them for when it should have been released on Monday. So let's buy it. It's a really, really, really big cock-up. And someone's going to pay a really, really big fine for this. I mean, financial fine. Don't worry about, you know, Google or anything.
Yeah, like trading standards who does the... Is that financial... No, it's Financial Services Authority in the UK. Who does it in the States? SEC? Securities and Exchange?
Somewhere.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, we're talking about tens of millions of pounds fine, maybe hundreds of millions of pounds fine.
Big good money. Could be a lot. Never mind. They've also had a good kicking from the European Union because of their privacy settings, and they've told the EU have told them to roll back to the previous privacy settings that were installed before they went to their new ones, and that's taken a long time because, I mean, that was about 8 months back, wasn't it? Now, I mean, there's a question here for me in that Google or EU are protecting its citizens in Europe, and they're saying, Google, you must roll back your privacy settings. But Google's going to have to effectively roll them back worldwide, surely then, isn't it? The EU's not the world police, is it?
The EU are brilliant at doing that. They are.
They're brilliant, great.
They've got sort of the whip end, haven't they?
Yep.
They've done it to Microsoft, and they're going to do it to Google. They just basically, it's these guys in Brussels going, we'll listen to a complaint and just go, yeah, we can do that. Let's make Google do something really inconvenient for a bit.
You may have noticed it's normally against American companies. I'm not saying there's anti-American bias in Europe at all, but there is, especially in business. But they're right. I mean, what Google did goes against European law, and just because certain countries don't abide by the same standards of certain laws, like human rights and various other things, that, you know, you've got to set the laws that are right for your region. I don't agree that Google have to change it for the whole world because of their licensing or whatever it is via country.
No, I'm not saying they have to do it, but the problem is, in terms of rolling back privacy settings for something which is as global as Google, a judgment by the EU ends up meaning that the application of it has to be low. You look at Microsoft, the browser ballot's worldwide now, isn't it?
Mm.
And that's an EU ruling only.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it will be something to do with when you log in from a certain country, your implied rights will be different depending on where you log in from. So instead of having 14 pages of rubbish that you don't read whenever you do you accept terms and conditions, there'll be 48 pages that you don't read. And it will just be implied as to where you sign in or what, you know, however it works, proxy or not, wherever you physically are sitting, is the rules that you're abiding by.
Well, that's the very thing that they're complaining about, though, I would say.
Yeah.
What's the feeling on your side of the pond, Eric, for the EU doing this kind of thing? Is there a backlash or is there a, well, it needed doing anyway because everyone hated it?
I hadn't followed this particular story or the privacy settings with this one, but in general, I think the EU is looked at as doing, at least with their Microsoft, going after Microsoft, it was looked at something that that they were doing that we aren't doing. So it was sort of like, well, someone has to do it. At least someone's doing it because our Justice Department has long since just given everyone just their free reign to do whatever anti-competitive practices they want to and not disclose things to customers and just do anything you want. So I haven't seen whether or not this one makes sense or is onerous or anything, but in general, I think, yeah, it's good that at least someone is looking out for the customers.
But in a funny way, that's actually part of what's been going on in big corporate law for a long time, is in certain parts of the world, we'll say the States, because obviously the biggest players, they look at something and say, there's absolutely no point us bothering with this because Europe will kick it into touch anyway. Let them deal with it. And it's actually part of the policy-making thing now. There's no point in everyone going after the same thing. If the US changed some law, it doesn't necessarily affect Europe. But if Europe changes a law, it affects everyone. So they just sort of leave Europe to get on with it.
Europe the bad boy.
Yeah.
Well, which is what the American candidates are saying at the moment on the election trail, isn't it? It's a major, major thing for them. Chatroom Sachs is saying the question is how they can offer what they're offering right now, the way that they're doing it, and still sharing the data between the apps when they've changed the policy. And that's a great point, because they gathered all that data on a crap policy of privacy, dispersed it through a whole pile of applications and functions, and now if they're being told to roll back the agreement, then that changes all of the data that they're currently holding and how they're going to trace that
back. It's potentially one reason why they may well end up rolling it back all across the board, because it's just going to be too difficult to roll it back on almost a per-person basis.
Hmm.
See, I'm bewildered by this, because this is, okay, so this is to do with the sharing of information, as in, you know, obviously it's the way that the Google applications allow their information to be shared. I mean, we had this with Apple for a little while ago. Nothing really major was. They very quickly closed off the fact that the phone was logging all the navigation information and uploading it every now and then. That was quickly turned off. What really bothers me, though, is the fact that when you sign up for something like Google Drive, it says Google reserves the right to do anything they like with the data you put on there. That's got nothing to do with this EU thing.
Hang on, say that again. Google reserves the right to do anything with the documents that you store on Google Drive.
Yeah. That's true of pretty much any site, yeah.
The Google policy is, there's a privacy policy and there's the rights policy. And the rights policy, Google stripped it right down to one page and says, if you put it on there, we can take a look at it.
SM,
and that's why I don't put anything on Google Drive.
SM in the chat room says that Sachs is a wise person. Sachs says, thank you, please explain that to my wife.
In general, any kind of thing like this with whether it's a end user license agreement or something where you sign away your right to a trial and you have to go to an arbiter as chosen by the corporation that you're suing, there's, at least in the United States, there's been a huge weight towards just the signing away of consumer rights by a simple contract, even when it's just something saying I accept, and no one really looks at it anymore. But I mean, that's why we have basically any site that accepts personal storage, including something like YouTube. Technically, you give away your right. If YouTube and Google wanted to, they could take your YouTube video and distribute it internationally to theaters and make 100% of the profits and give you none. That's within their right that you signed off to when you uploaded that video. Now, hopefully they won't. But I don't like giving away rights like that and then just hoping that the business will do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a comment here in the... I'm going to go back to SM and Sachs, because SM says, hang on a minute, do you want me to wake her up? As his wife, by the way. SM's just said as well, what about Dropbox? Because Dropbox does this, and I had no clue that Dropbox did this. I put customer videos on there to send them backwards and forwards.
If you look at the T's and C's of Dropbox, the Dropbox says, what is yours remains yours. It actually says it in big letters at the bottom of Dropbox. And I know that sort of gives you that warm and fuzzy feeling and probably isn't true, but it's still...
Well, the key there is remains yours. Oh, sorry, I didn't...
No, finish off.
The key word is that it remains yours, and that just like with YouTube, you give them a license, but not... You give them a non-exclusive, worldwide, royalty-free license to use your stuff. So they can't take away your right to distribute it yourself. But you still own it, but that you also give them a full equal ownership to that content. And really, I think the big problem with this is, or the reason we have it, I should say, is because the laws and the lawmakers and the courts and everything just have not kept up with technology. They still don't understand how this stuff works. So until we have a better understanding of what the function of a YouTube site is, what the function of a personal cloud storage drive is, I think once we nail down what the purpose of those things are, then we won't have to have this ridiculous language saying that we can sell all your personal photos as stock photos on istockphoto.com if we choose. You know, we just don't need that. And that's not good that everyone just assumes you give full copies just as for something.
But there is protection, as in, I mean, Ewan and I have a protection. I take X amount of pictures, and I own certain parts of the copyright, and I own certain parts of the image rights, and this, that, and the other. Now, I have had companies that say, can you sign this, that, and the other? And, you know, in general, I do, because I can't be bothered with the hassle. But for everyone I've never signed anything for, technically, I can go and do various things with these images. If I never want to work again is the outcome of that. And, you know, YouTube or Google or any of these people, even if they have rights to your stuff, it only takes them to do something wrong with it once, and they're finished. They're absolutely finished. If they take something, it doesn't matter how minuscule and obscure it is, if they take a video that Ewan makes, broadcasts it, sells it, sticks it in a theatre, does whatever they want, they're done overnight because of they lose their customers overnight. So your protection...
They lost the trust.
Yeah, your protection is the same thing that protects my customers from me going or using stuff I've done for them. Even though I've got every legal right to do it, I will never work again if I do. And that is your protection.
Sax in the chat room has posted a fantastic link that I reckon everyone's clicked on just now, called boxcryptor.com. If you use Dropbox, you can use boxcryptor.com, and they'll give you an encryption thing that will work on Dropbox, which is fantastic by the looks. It's free, according to it, for non-commercial stuff. Well, the interesting thing that I find, though, within that is that Dropbox, I've paid for the extra 102 gigabytes of space available to me. And within that, you'd expect a secure facility, because I'm paying for it now. It's not a free service. The free stuff kind of, all right, it's not great, but I still understand that that's okay. But when you pay for it, you'd expect something a little bit more exclusive, shall we say.
It's funny, because I've got a few of these sort of commercial versions of Dropbox as well, and the only thing you get, I've noticed when I signed up for the most recent one, is your rights don't change. You just get more storage. Because I was thinking the way you did. I was thinking, do I get extra security? Do I get something extra within the my rights? Because now I'm paying them £180 a year for this service. No, not at all. All I do is I get faster download for my customers, and I get more storage, and that's it.
But this goes back to the thing that I was saying earlier on a little bit as well, though. You know, it's enshrining case history in the UK that if I take an image, I own that image, and unless there is an agreement of me physically selling it to somebody else, then they can't remove my rights to that image without a contract whereby they give me a money or a consideration in return.
Sure.
Now, the problem that you've got is that we are certainly global, thanks to the internet now. I put nothing on Flickr because I know that once I put it on Flickr, it is gone. I cannot control it. I cannot stop the use of it. It is absolutely out there for everyone and everyone to use. And it cannot be enforced. The case law in the UK can't be enforced in the US. And if I went to them and said, well, I had a contract I was the originator of this, they cannot remove it from me, I don't believe for one second that Google would be upheld. Go ahead. Sorry, James.
I was going to say that what we're dealing with here are web-based services. That is different from the cloud. If, for example, you were going to go to UK2 and said, I'd like to buy a VPS, please, and I stick all my tosh on there, you'd be paying for, quite rightfully so, the availability, the uptime, the fact that you can access it from anywhere in the world, and hopefully backups, you know, the stuff that makes you kind of comfortable what's there. And UK2 do a great job of providing that service. And you know the password to it, and nobody else does. When you're dealing with a web-based service that has an HTTP front end that participates in the whole of the not the information superhighway, the web-based, web 2.0 experience, you're going to have the risk of stuff that you have up there being available to other people. That's just the risk you take.
Mm. Good point.
Mm.
By the way, before you change subjects, I've got some late breaking news here. Google has just introduced a $249 ARM-based Chromebook that they want to be your second computer in your house to compete with tablets.
Have you got a link for that?
It's one of the first things on Ars Technica is how I found it. It's $250, first consumer product to have the A15 ARM chip. Let's see. So it's a little one. It's sort of like this, like a little MacBook Air, but obviously doesn't have the already they're saying it's like kind of a cheap plastic build. But it's interesting. I mean, I guess it'd be for people who want a casual second screen for browsing the web while they watch TV or something, you know, not a primary computer. And yet don't want a tablet.
Can so I stop you, get a keyboard. You there, Eric? I want to tell you, this is a good time to talk about the Surface, which is a Atom-based piece of hardware that's going for £499, $649, where this thing pretty much does the same thing except without the touchscreen, that for less than half the price, almost a third of the price. I think Microsoft have overpriced their tablet.
I think so. I think as soon as we found out that little, what do they call it? It's a membrane keyboard is the old name. But
it is kind of cool, we have to say, however. It is kind of cool, we have to say, however.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is cool. But they announced it's going to be $110, I think, or $120. And then just the one for the traditional click keyboard is like $10 more, which I would certainly get. You know, because it remains to be seen whether typing on that membrane keyboard is responsive or can be done with a touch type traditional, you know, hand position. But I think the keyboard to me was one of the things that I thought was going to make the iPad killer. And as soon as we find out that that pushes the price way over the price of the entry level iPad for the same specs, I think that.
Hang on a second, mate, because the iPad doesn't come with a keyboard at all, and any of the additional keyboards that you want to buy are around the £80 to £120 mark. So in terms of cost, it's not that far away.
Okay, well, that's a point. I had not shopped or bought for a keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, I've just bought the Logitech. My cool thing the other week, it was the Logitech additional keyboard where it folds into and you've got a completely aluminium little laptop, effectively. And then you pull it out and it's got magnets in and you set it in the frame and it works like a keyboard. And it's, you know, like a proper little computer, and it's beautiful as an experience. I love it now. But that was £100, including delivery.
The big danger with all these add-ons, you're turning your tablets into something as inconvenient as a laptop in terms of weight and bulk and.
No, I mean I'll go and get it at the end of the show and show you, Ian. But it's not. It's extremely good.
The advantage of a tablet that is at the lower price point, because quite honestly, I bet 90% of people with tablets use them for simply sitting in front of the TV and doing a bit of browsing. And you don't need a £400, £500 piece of kit to do that.
No, agreed. Absolutely, you don't. But that's not what I use it for. I mean, I'll sit in a meeting or I'll sit out on site and I'm making some notes of something that I've shot, and I'll sit there with it open like a little laptop and sit and type stuff in, and it's got a little Bluetooth keyboard. And the charge on that Bluetooth keyboard, I leave it on constantly. It is weeks before it needs recharging. It's superb.
You sit in a pub when you should be talking to your mate, typing away.
Well, you say that, otherwise you'd just be watching the gyrating on them, the music television videos, weren't you?
Or you just have a very low mate count.
Can I just say, by the way, the Surface RT's got a Tegra chip inside and not an Atom. I do apologise.
Oh, I'll let you off. I think where Microsoft may have missed the trick here is they've got the Windows 8 coming out, obviously. They've got this being released, launched, or what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got the new phone systems coming out. They've got a lot of things enterprise-wise that they should have, I really believe they should have done the Apple-esque sort of wham-bam, one big event and saying, not so much one more thing, we are giving you a whole new Windows 8 infrastructure. You know, you've got the tablet, you've got the PC, you've got this, you've got the phone, you've got that. And they should have sold it as a one big, massive.
Yeah, it's the Windows 8 platform kit included. Yeah.
And, you know, that's what it's still allowing everything else to have that head start on them. You know, Apple have already got the the iOS that integrates with this and integrates with your phone and that and the other. That it's almost like everything is just waiting there to be launched in one great big bonanza, and they've just let it trickle out and bit of this and Windows 8 looks all right, very nice. Oh, that phone, it might be okay. The camera's good. All this tab, you know, it's not $2,000 like everyone tried to put it down and say it would have been. That's actually quite good. But instead of doing something clever with it, if you like Apple-esque with it, they've just let it dribble out here and do that and the other, and it's just going to end up with, in a year's time, we'll go, yeah, that's all right, isn't it? Have you seen one? Yeah, I've got a friend at work that's got one. They've just completely lost any pizzazz, if you like. The biggest thing they had.
Well, I mean, at the price that this is at, I mean, this is $499 for a 32 gig model. So that's cheap or cheaper than Apple's. It's cheaper, isn't it? Because it's $599 for 32 gig.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the price is wrong, but I think they'd had a real opportunity.
Well, there was talk of $1,200 last month,
with
wasn't
infrastructure, there? The fact that they're more or less, for Windows, giving away the price of Windows 8, so there's going to be X amounts of millions of machines out there that overnight could be updated to be on the same platform as this and the same platform as the phone and everything else. And it's almost like flicking a button. And instead of like when Apple have to do it, I don't know how many mountain lines do they sell. Even if everybody that had a compatible machine that got mountain line, it's nothing but compared to the size that Microsoft could get by just having a tenth of the machines that Windows 8 compatible going overnight. You know, so they really, really missed the boat on this. And I'm a bit annoyed because of, you know, I'm a firm believer that Apple do great things, but to keep Apple on their toes, you need a real anti-Apple. You know, it's like the Cold War, you know, and there is no Cold War at the moment, so we've got all sorts of trouble from everywhere else. If Microsoft play the game right, Apple up their game, Microsoft up their game, Google up their game, and we all benefit, and the prices come down. The whole thing has been yet again handled in a Microsoft sort of way, and I'm really disappointed.
I'll be honest, though, Alex, I would much rather, as you say, for them to be upping their game in at least a small way than trying to sue each other for patent infringement.
Oh, like this suing thing. Oh, yeah, it's going to come to an end before long, I'm sure, but, you know, let's have... Look, as long as nobody says it's a rip-off and all the rest of it, let's have Apple innovating. Let's have the new Android tablet. Let's have the new Samsung tablet. Let's have the new, Apple in a week's time, you know. Let's have them all be bringing something out and just trying to out-innovate each other and stop all this nonsense.
Chat room is saying the Surface should have been a tad cheaper to compete with Apple's established ecosystem. Paul says to have an ecosystem, you need developers, you need customers, you need hardware, chicken and egg situation. Jeff, what's the RC? Oh, that's the wrong thing. SM says iPad 32 gig is £479, so that is actually quite a bit cheaper. And this thing's going at $699, including the keyboard. There's no keyboard ever comes with the iPad. And it's $899, isn't it, for the 64 gig in the States, dollars? So I think it's quite interesting. I think the ecosystem of Windows, if there's a backwards compatibility with Sync and that kind of stuff through Windows 7 or with Vista, then this has got a real chance.
Also, remember, in Windows, as you know, you might need to bend a few bits and pieces, but it's always been compatible with everything. Going back to Symbian and whatever other phone system you want to mention, they all worked on Windows.
Yeah, but when she's saying that, don't forget that the for tech companies, pounds equal dollars, but don't also forget that in the States there's no sales tax on the prices that you see, whereas when you see the prices in the UK, there's VAT included as well. So some states...
Well, there's sales tax. I mean, not if you get it from certain online vendors, but in the store, there's sales tax. There's just no value-added tax.
Yeah, so you'll pay $699 plus sales tax, or $499 plus sales tax. That's what I'm saying. So the price that we see on TV has got our sales tax included. Yours hasn't.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying the opposite. Okay.
Yeah, no. So if we see $499, that's the price we pay at the till, whereas you'll pay $499 plus whatever the federal or the regional tax code is, the state tax code is.
Interesting.
We don't get that. I mean, it's, I hate shopping in the States when I go over there. It's a pain in the ass.
You never know how much you're going to spend. And also, isn't it, you can actually claim, can you claim some of it back when you get back?
You can claim it all back. You just go, you bring your receipts back and you say, I've paid value-added tax on this. And they. But then the problem is you've got to declare that you've imported it. And the import tax may be the equal amount.
Oh, don't ever do that. Pay your American taxes.
Just pay the American taxes and bring it back.
I did that on film. I got back about 8% and they charged me 17.5%.
Oops.
That was really clever of me. I should have kept my mouth shut.
Batwin says she's never thought of that. She feels so blonde, but she's not. She's purple.
Hey, just a very quick one from Princess Bagel saying, I heard there's no backwards compatibility with previous systems. I would say for Windows RT, you can't just stick your copy of... you know, Word for Windows from the old age-old Word 97 or whatever it is on there. You need the RT software. But I think that for Intel systems, you know, Intel i5, whatever, your standard Pentium-style processors, Windows 8 should be backwards compatible. In fact, I'm banking on it being so because I've got a little netbook that's running Windows XP at the moment. I haven't put 7 on it. I haven't put something Vista on it, but I want to put Windows 8 on it because it's cheap and I want to see how it works.
Fortress tells us that California sales tax is 7.25. I have to say I thought it was about 9%, but I'll vouch to his greater knowledge because I'm pretty sure that's where he is.
It is. It depends on your county. I think my receipts show like 9.5%.
Oh, then you've got to pay for a bag.
For a bag?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised to find out that there's no backward compatibility with the Surface, but I think in order to be a success, it has to at least go back to 7. I can understand it not going back to Vista or XP, but it's got to go back to 7, surely. And if there's no cross compatibility on that, they're really screwed. Sorry, Alex.
When's it actually released, though? Is it
26th of October.
So next that's week. The date that the Surface surfaced.
Ah, thank you.
That wasn't actually being funny. I didn't know when it was.
Yeah, no, it's Monday. It goes on sale on the 26th of October, so that's the Friday, isn't it? And I could think you'd probably find that whatever's announced on the 23rd of October by Apple will probably be, if it's quite small stuff, desktops and so on, that'll be in store as of the Friday, as well as trying to sap the buck away, and anything that's deliverable is going to be deliverable the following Friday.
If you think
are we right, looking for...
Sorry, I was going to say, aren't you going to have companies that are ordering 5,000 of these things? It's not going to be like the Apple-esque people queuing up outside stores to buy it.
I don't think you're going to have companies buying these. No, not a chance.
Which stores would they queue outside?
That's what I'm saying. They won't, but I'm saying this will be bought up by companies to start off with. It won't be bought up by
individuals. The question is, what's the 10-inch Nexus going to do? Are they going to get in there and sort of undercut everybody with what could actually turn out to be a fairly... pokey piece of kit that everybody of people who've got an Android phone are going to be fairly well acquainted with?
You know, the smart thing for Microsoft to do would be to have a couple of key big businesses, big enterprise, who would be open to a test program, basically, where they provided them all the employees with these Surface tablets and really used it as a case study, a testing ground to show the world what a Microsoft Windows 8 tablet based office functioned, how it was different, how it was better. As I say that, though, I realize maybe they don't really have quite the software ready yet. I mean, Microsoft Office and all the stuff that they need to really be productive on a tablet uniquely differently than a laptop or a desktop might not be ready yet. And that could, I think that would hold back businesses from, like you said, like waiting in line or buying up the first batch.
But, I mean, I don't think tablets necessarily. I mean, James just asked about this Nexus 10 and are they going to undercut and various things. I don't think the market at the moment is necessarily about money. I think it's about systems. Because you've had really dirt cheap, you know, if you really wanted a dirt cheap tablet that didn't do very much, they've been around for ages. You know, you can buy a tablet for £99 or something.
Yeah.
I think people aren't buying it on that. They're buying it on, is it an Apple? Right, okay, because I like Apple or whatever. Is it Android? Because I like Android, but I don't want a rubbish, crappy one. I don't mind spending the same amount of money because that Samsung looks really pretty and we've heard of it. And now it's going to be, is it a Microsoft? I don't think we're at the stage of people making purchasing decisions so much on price rather than actually what the system is. I think people
A good example of that, Alex, is your Kindle versus your Kobo versus your Sony e-reader versus...
Yeah.
something that WH Smith, WH Smith go for Kobo as well. You know, there's the marketplace is wide open. The prices are all over the place, and it's depending on what people kind of feel most comfortable with, I guess.
Yeah, it's system-related rather than price-related.
It's the features and interoperability, actually, what it does for you.
Yeah, but also, I don't know, you buy something, and if you don't not sure what it is, you don't really know that it's going to be there in 3 months' time. Mm. You know, you can buy some silly, I don't know, a $99 Amazon, not Amazon, that's the wrong word, Android tablet. Yeah, on some very old Android system. You don't expect it to work in 3 months' time, but you do expect
right, and
to
that, buy... Right, and that's the problem. Android is still very much the... it's the Wild West. I mean, you can plunk down $500, $600, or even $700 on a tablet, and then find that it's discontinued, and they stop supporting it. A month later, and then no more upgrades for you. Whereas all your friends who had iPads keep getting the new iOS versions every few months, and other systems too. Or your lucky friend who got a Motorola or some other Android brand is continuing to receive the latest and greatest updates while you're just left in the cold. Or they didn't fix major bugs or all kinds of things. But absolutely the market has shifted away from a upfront hardware cost, the upfront cost, and the market has shifted towards app stores and that magic 30% number, 30% cut of all things downloaded through the company's own store.
Chat room's going back to the playbook. They did this last week. Who gives a toss about the playbook? It's a dead platform.
Yeah.
it's the stop the door open with it. That's about it.
They're cheap. They're right. Now.
You'll see them on sci-fi programs in 10 years' time. You'll see them sort of bolted to the walls. Really cheap pictures.
I'm doing crap graphics for a...
I think they're giving them away in box to Captain Crunch now. Little kids open the box. Hey, I got a playbook.
Excellent.
I've got something to pour the milk onto.
McKinnon has been told, and Theresa May saved him. He's not going out to the States to face trial for his hacking into the NASA computer and the State Department. And all's well and good, allegedly. I'm interested here because we've got four people that are on this side of the pond relating to the McKinnon story. And Eric, you're on the American side. And gauging the response, really, I mean... What's America said about the McKinnon thing? Has it even surfaced at all in the press there?
Not that I know of. Don't go by that.
But then you do sleep under a duvet all week until this show comes round.
Yes.
Anyone got any opinions on McKinnon?
I've got to be careful because I know we're not going to agree.
No, go on. You say what you want.
I think...
The whole point of a debate is having the opposite side.
Yeah, I don't know, but both of us got personal input into this sort of story, haven't we? And I just, I mean,
James, can you at least give me like a one sentence summary?
Basically, shouldn't the Pentagon and then NASA be basically offering him a job and basically, using his skills usefully?
No, from what I understand, it wasn't exactly that hard getting in.
No, okay, I mean, I don't think Eric's really that aware of the story.
Which basis their own fault?
Gary McKinnon was a guy who suffers from Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autism, and he was looking for information relating to UFOs and aliens and thought that the American government would have it. So he hacked into NASA's computers to have a route around for it and the State Department's. They caught him in there. They traced it back to where he was, and they shut him out, and apparently it was very easy to get in. There wasn't particularly difficult with passwords and so on. And the admin password was God.
In which case, why haven't they got the system administrators on trial?
Yeah, exactly. And and they want to extradite McKinnon to face crimes for what he's done. There you go.
Because their admins, their tech support people were rubbish. They want to get our guy.
That's their reason behind it, yeah.
So,
the issue from my point of view is, I think, the British government, I think the British government and the British people... who I think represent the welfare state, the state that has a responsibility for everybody, and that includes Mr. McKinnon, would suggest that they cannot be sure what the treatment of Gary McKinnon would be over in the state, and that whether they would be able to, they would take into account his condition, which is is effectively a part of, as you say, on the autistic spectrum, it is part of a learning disability. The British justice system would take that into account, and they cannot guarantee that the American justice system would. And I think it's a good decision because it treats him as a human being rather than a criminal.
The chat room's lit up already. The Blue Touch page would be lit ahead of November 5th.
I think there is an, just from what you guys have told me so far, it sounds like this guy should not be extradited. I mean, that sounds like something you do to a terrorist or a national security risk. And it sounds like the evidence is clearly that this guy was just, mentally obsessed with finding information about a specific thing. And he found a very low barrier to entry to a computer that he thought would have it. So he got in. I mean, it's sort of like saying, it's sort of like someone walks into a store and says, hello, is anyone here? And the next thing you know, he's handcuffed and taken away for breaking an entry. You know, there has to be some kind of rule or some kind of understanding of if something is extremely easy to get into, it would seem like it's not a big deal. And if you're just looking for something specific and you're not trying to plant a virus or download state secrets or something, it doesn't sound like any harm was done, really.
And, but the thing is, and it's also his mindset, if his mindset is fairly standard for someone with Asperger's, is that he doesn't know where to... it's interesting, mentally obsessed is an insightful way to explain it, Princess Bagel says in the chat room. What he probably did is he sat down and focused on what it was, and it wasn't it's this sort of awareness, this peripheral vision. If I were to sit down at a computer and say, I'm interested in UFOs, not going to go near NASA because I'm going to get, I'd get absolutely roasted alive if I did that, because I have this kind of, this circumspection. If he doesn't have that and doesn't have somebody to looking over his shoulder constantly saying, no, I don't think you should do that really, which people who operate alone. I mean, I do worry about, for example, even my son isn't diagnosed with Asperger's. But I do worry what he gets up to on the internet, because if he gets focused on something, he'll lose himself in it because he's a kid, and he could end up being extradited or someone potentially extraditing him to the US. Massive numbers of people are doing this hacking, and it's the people like it's the people like Anonymous, or even worse, those websites which prey on victims who aren't the government, these individuals who have done nothing wrong. All they've done is been idiots. Done something, put themselves a little bit too far online, and everybody's exploited that. They're the people who people should be going across, because they're actually committing kind of crimes against people rather than against government institutions.
And I think someone on the panel, in the chat room a minute ago, mentioned that people who have Asperger's or on the autistic spectrum, one of the issues they have is that they don't really see social cues the same way. So you might have someone in a severe case, they could walk into your home and look for something and be like, oh, you're upset? You feel violated that I came into your house? I had no idea. You know, and they just don't get why someone would feel that way. And so it seems totally plausible to me that he could just have had no idea that guessing a very easy to guess password and downloading a few files would even upset anybody, let alone make people prosecute him and extradite him like a terrorist.
Well, let's be careful here. Now, go through what the chat room's saying, first of all. I work with people with Asperger's, says Batwench, and I can understand the problems that the jail system would have problems with this condition. That's presuming guilt straight away. So well, he was going to go to jail if he was gone. Asperger's sufferers do not have the same understanding and interpretation of social issues and concepts, etc., says Princess Bagel, and pursue goals persistently without regards to repercussions. Now, the second part of that is the interesting part, because actually those are two distinct issues. It's not about whether... obsessional behavior. Well, the one part is obsessional behavior. Whether he knew that he was doing right or wrong is a completely different issue. If he's obsessed to the point that he's willing to disregard all of the beliefs about right and wrong to pursue it, he'll do that. Asperger's will let him do that. But the problem is, he knew right from wrong. If I called Ellis in here, who's got Asperger's, and I said to him, Ellis, is it right or is it wrong to look through someone else's computer for something that you really want to know? He would know that it was wrong. Whether he could control himself and stop himself from doing it is a different question. But at the core belief, he would know the difference between right and wrong. And one of the things that Asperger's people are very, very astute on is rules. You set hard and fast rules, they don't overstep those. They know that the rule is there and they do not follow it. And I guarantee you, McKinnon knew damn well what he was doing. He knew absolutely damn well it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And if you can stand trial, if you know that your actions are right or wrong, that is one of the fundamental concepts that allows you to stand trial for your actions. Asperger's people are not above the law for
their
actions.
I totally agree. And I would say, what I would say, though, is the fact that if we extradited him to the US, the rehabilitation that the British government would embark upon, because there's punishment, there's punishment to fit the crime, and there's a rehabilitation that's carried on afterwards, may not happen. And that's the same for everybody, for anybody who commits a crime, depending on the kind of the severity of the crime. Where they have the death penalty over in the US. They don't have it here. There is such a thing as rehabilitation.
Hang on. Let's just be careful that we're not insulting American listeners here by suggesting that they've got a third world country that doesn't have a judicial system that can deal with something as fundamental as Asperger's. Absolutely.
We don't know, but that's the point. We don't know.
Oh, come off it. Jesus.
Well, you know, I mean, Asperger's aside, I think that someone should not be prosecuted as a terrorist because they went looking for... I mean, he didn't go looking for state secrets. He didn't go looking for nuclear weapons or rocket booster secrets. He went looking for something make-believe. He went looking for aliens that every astronomer will tell you, you know, have not been visited. Every scientist will tell you we have not seen them. There is no evidence. And so if he thought he was going to find some, there wasn't there. He was on a wild goose chase. He was prosecuted as a terrorist for a wild goose chase.
I work in market research. I've got an Asperger's syndrome problem, and I broke into your house to see which type of biscuits you buy because I had to fill out my survey. Got to get the survey filled out. Come off it.
Here's another thing. Okay, I agree. If you phrase it like that, saying walk into someone's house or sit down at their computer and spy on their hard drive, is that wrong? Well, yeah, then you can kind of see it's a pretty clear
chat room says, does Eric work for the man?
What?
Cheru says, does Eric work for the man?
But think of it this way. I mean, I think as internet savvy geeks, we all do a little bit of URL hacking. How many times have you clicked on a link? It said page wasn't there or something, and you notice a little thing wrong with the URL that if you just change the letter or two, oh, hey, it suddenly works now. I found out that I can URL hack and download the latest episodes of The Daily Show in the Colbert Report, 720p, the moment that they air on television. I didn't even have cable. I can get it the moment they air with commercial free from simple URL hacking and a download accelerator. And
I can hear sirens. They're coming to get you, Eric.
I know. So what I'm saying is, depending on the context, it could be, I mean, imagine if you just put in just the right URL and then you got one of those little drop downs, a little animation says login and password, and you just guessed. You could do this and have no idea the extent of the laws you broke because it was so simple and so innocuous and had no effect on anybody.
Do you know it's right or wrong?
You've got to look at the context and the intent and the harm done. You can't just say, breaking an entry, maximum fine, you're a terrorist, treason.
It's the intent which is the key thing for me.
The intent was to break in.
Yeah, but it was his intent to break in and do damage, or was it just to look for some information?
To break in.
And also, from a British political point of view, this is a man who broke in to get some files on UFOs, whereas we've managed to keep Abu Hamza away from America for, what, nearly 10 years? And he's done more.
Who's got the ice cream van?
I mean, I think you could even make the case that because of the nature of the material he was looking for, information on visitors from other planets, that was a non-rational thing to do. I mean, if you look, Carl Sagan, Stephen Hawking, Albert Einstein, all these people who study this stuff tell you we have not been visited and there is no evidence for that. So to go looking further than that, it speaks as some kind of different belief or not really understanding what's going on.
I dare say that there are some people hacking into the American governmental systems as we speak, possibly from Eastern Europe or even further afield, and nobody knows about it yet. Or maybe they do know about it, but they cannot catch them. International espionage is going on. It's the cyber crime of now. You know, it's the crime of now, cyber crime. And in some respects, this guy's almost been sort of not. It's been marked up as a perpetrator of that. Rather than the act, there are people doing that, but these are shady characters who'd probably break your knees if you tried to go anywhere near them, or get someone else to. There is a frightening amount of that.
I've spent a lot of years now with Ellis, knowing full well he's got Asperger's syndrome, and I'm sorry, but McKinnon is doing no favours to real Asperger's sufferers because he knew damn well what he was doing.
Yeah. But he just never expected anybody to react like this.
Yeah.
That may be, but I'm just saying, you know, especially in the United States, we have a weird hair trigger reaction and laws that support that. You know, someone who makes a joke, someone gets thrown off of a plane because they made a passing joke to the stewardess. Oh, boy, I don't have a bomb in here. Why are you looking at me funny? Or something like that. You know, they are not a terrorist. You know, joking about a bomb is not the same as actually having a bomb and threatening to blow everybody up. There is a difference of intent and what the person was even capable of. And so you have to look at those things. You can't just say, oh, the letter of the law, lock him up for life. Yeah, I think that's silly.
Chatroom saying that I'm saying he's faking his Asperger's. That's not what I've said at all. It's just very convenient to say that he didn't know what he was doing because of the Asperger's, and I think he knew full well what he was doing. And right, most Asperger's will know full well what they're doing.
Well, can I just make a couple of points? Because I certainly don't want to get in an argument with anyone. That's why I've been quiet.
It's only opinions, mate.
No. Yeah, but, you know, both me and you are quite emotionally up there when it comes to Asperger's. So, you know, that's why I get a bit temperamental. That's why I don't want to get too heated. Asperger's aren't a set of rules, as in, you know, diagnosis, symptoms. They're not only different for everyone, they're different levels of each person. In my experience, the person closest to me with that problem has a real issue with understanding right and wrong in certain circumstances. He understands, for instance, you say about breaking into, right, for instance, say my next door neighbour's door was open, my child, well, it's a bit obvious anyway. If I hadn't have originally said to him that if you see an open door, it's really, you shouldn't really just walk in because it's not your place. If that hadn't occurred beforehand, and I didn't tell my son that, he'd just walk in. And he wouldn't know that's different. He wouldn't know that was wrong. So what I'm saying, with this case, if he hadn't had the situation before, knowing that going to the US government, et cetera, I'm not saying it is the case, but in my experience of that problem, I could see my son not knowing that it was wrong because he hadn't specifically been told that particular case was wrong. Also,
I agree. And even a person who was fully aware that that would be considered a privacy violation, just to walk in, you walk down to the street, you see an open door, you just walk into someone's house and just like look around and walk out. Is that illegal? Probably. And maybe you should get at least a slap on the wrist or something for violating people's privacy.
Let's be really careful here, because what you're talking about, there's two different things. Entry into premises is an intent. It's not. If you've got an open door and you walk through that open door and you said, I was concerned for the safety and welfare of the person that's inside, there is no offence that's been committed. There is no intent there for what's taken place. It is a summary offence, if you like, to hack into someone else's computer. It's regardless of the intent of what you're doing. Summary offence. Let's get that really clear.
No, you're right, as in
whether there was actually in terms of a proper hack and malicious damage versus just browsing around.
This guy's doing like
browsing around in another person's computer is an offense.
Curiosity. I think that, and what I was going to say was, there's a big difference between just walking into someone's house, taking a loop, and walking back out versus breaking the window, stealing the laptops, stealing the cash out of the drawers, and driving off in your van. I mean, clearly the intent is different. Clearly there was in that example, there was just a simple curiosity that bordered on privacy violations or social violations versus the intent. And if he felt like he was just doing library research, like looking at yet another database, who did he harm by that? Nobody.
Yeah. No, just to finish.
It's the overall intent at the end of the day.
It's not about intent, but okay, no, go on, Alex.
No, just saying, intent, as I say, it does and doesn't matter in this because of part of the problem is not necessarily recognizing whether it's not so much, it's not even the level of intent in the case like this, it's understanding whether what you're doing is right or wrong, you know, as in, did he intend to steal something or not? It's not necessarily the issue, did he really realize what he was doing in the same way as we do? Was wrong in the same way as we do, and I leave it at that. And the only other thing in this particular case, because of obviously, you know, reading up as much as I could find about it previously, Asperger's is the thing that has made the newspapers. It's one of the many problems this poor fella's got, and that's something the newspapers and whatever they've got. Asperger's is the tag word that people use at the moment, you know, because it's the one we've all heard of. It used to be just autistic. Then we heard of Asperger's. This guy's got a few more issues than just that. And, you know, we're focusing on this one, but his problems are a lot deeper. And his problems, if he went there, irrelevant of even guilt or anything, or even irrelevant of the Asperger's, his mental health is such irrelevant to the Asperger's that he probably would not have survived it.
Last words gone to
Alex. That's the final line.
There we go. If that doesn't get emails, I have no idea how to get emails.
And no one fell out. I'm really glad about that.
Absolutely. This podcast and all of the others on the network are brought to you by UK2.net. They pick up all of the bandwidth. We had a bit of a good month in September. We had 2 million downloads of the podcasts in 4 weeks. That's all podcasts, all shows. It's not just one show or anything like that. 73 terabytes of data disappeared off the servers. I've got no idea who was talking about us, but it was huge. The bandwidth was unbelievable. What did UK2 say? Nothing. Not a word. Just fine. Did the servers fall over with all the demand? Nope. Kept churning it out, and it was all just fine and dandy. They're brilliant. We love them to bits. We've got a dedicated server with them. I couldn't afford 73 terabytes of bandwidth at that kind of rate. They are everything to us. They keep us afloat. And the reason that they're very happy and don't say a word is because you guys buy loads of service off them. They are very happy with the amount that that you guys give them in terms of business. And it's just a really nice, easygoing relationship between the two of us. They pick up all the bandwidth. We say they're great. And you guys think they're great. I get emails regularly from people saying that things are just fine and dandy. Good customer service, site builder applications, brilliant. If you want anything for the web, domains, VPS, VPN, dedicated servers, co-location services, just go and try UK2. Go to our website first, britishtechnetwork.com, click on their link, and then go back to the sponsors link on our page, and you'll get all the offer codes that are in there, and put them into your basket and get fantastic deals. Please support UK2, because they've supported us for the last 3 years, and they're supporting us for the next 2 years. So we owe them a great deal. Thank you very much for their support and patronage. We'd be lost without them. It was a good month. And October's looking the same way. Right. Here we go. It's time for, drum roll, the cool thing. Mr. Hart, start us off, boy.
Now, I was trying to work out whether or not we've spoken about this before. It's the sort of thing I think Eric may well have spoken about, but it's something if we haven't mentioned it, we should do. It's called the Humble Bundle. It's a way for small, independent sort of collections of people to sell their wares in a kind of pay what you think it's worth kind of way. And they do software, they've done music. And this week at www.humblebundle.com, there is a collection of ebooks which you just pay whatever you think they're worth. And whether or not they're great, who knows? You know, it's an opportunity to be able to try something.
That sounds
and
cool.
It's like a lucky dip. So at humblebundle.com, I mean, a month or so ago, Beth bought sort of a geek music collection. It had They Might Be Giants, Jonathan Coulton, a couple of other sort of OK Go. It was just kind of like, really, it was just a collection of stuff. I think she paid like 15 quid for it. And it was just like, must be 3 hours of music at least. So,
why?
Yeah, go for it. Humblebundle.com, see if you like it. The more people, it's the kind of like the more people who buy it, the more it gets unlocked and everybody has a great time. The other thing I was going to have to very quickly mention is something that I only came across today. It's something called Microsoft Tag. We've seen QR codes, those little square things with the dots and all that business. In fact, the jam folder t-shirt's got one on. Microsoft have come out with their own one. And it's called the Microsoft Tag. If you go to tag.microsoft.com, you can see their own version of a 2D barcode. And I only came across it because a particular product had it on. I thought, what the hell's that? And I tried to read it with my Android phone's QR code reader, and it said, you need the Microsoft Tag thing. I thought, Microsoft have made something of their own version of everything they've done. DNS, they've done, you know, network implementations, but now they've done their own version of 2D barcodes. Whether or not it'll catch on, I just don't know. But it's worth having a look at if you fancy trying something nobody else has got. Microsoft Tag.
Microsoft Tag. Thank you, mate. Chat room's up in arms because you mentioned the word Microsoft, but I think there's nothing wrong with it. It's the open show. People thought that the big show was for Microsoft. I don't know why Big's got an association with Microsoft, but there you go. It's not. It's just general tech. Microsoft's fine here. No haters. Ian, what have you got for us, mate?
Nothing particularly exciting. It's a bit of run-of-the-mill. I've actually been much updating my infrastructure this week, put a few NAS drives in, taking all my backup out onto cloud, and just basically just want to sing the praises of it. I've been advising these devices to clients for ages and very much been running an arc here, but I've actually got myself fully into the 21st and absolutely love it. Can I have something that's uncool?
You can.
I've downloaded a whole variety of Apple iPad apps over the last month, and not one is of any use. We need to get better quality iPhone apps and iPad apps.
What type of apps are we talking about here?
Specialist sports stuff. I do a lot of target shooting, and I wanted one to record information. I recently downloaded QuickOffice HD, and again, doesn't quite work, doesn't quite sync with Google Cloud, doesn't quite sync with the Microsoft apps, etc. So, uncool. I just want some good iPhone, iPad apps, please.
General.
I love iPad. I'm sick of downloading rubbish apps.
Good. Whinges are no problem, mate. Pass of the week instead of pick of the week. Alex, what have you got for us, mate?
Okay, quite simply, it's a book. It's an ebook. I'm going to try and sell it like I'm an oil snake oil salesman. Right, people may laugh at me, especially anyone that's got any knowledge on anything, but I use Rapid Weaver. And the reason I use Rapid Weaver is because I like the stack system, which is basically you've got a framework and you can either buy stacks or build stacks, and you sort of throw things in the framework. And within that framework, you can throw in little, you know, it's a bit like WordPress, but, you know, slightly more complex. And another reason I use it is I hang things off it. So I use a basic structure, then I write some CSS or CMS, and then I, you know, play around and I write a bit of HTML, and it just holds everything together. And when you're trying to do something quickly for somebody, normally as a favor, within a couple of hours and a good bit of knowledge, you can produce something that is completely individual, but based on these building blocks that you can pull in from various places and buy, and there's free bits and pieces, and you can do some really lovely stuff. But it does get quite complicated once you get into the nitty-gritty of it. And my favourite person in the world that writes stacks various bit add-ons is a guy called Joe Workman. And he's finally brought out a book, and it's actually called Rapid Weaver 5 for Beginner's Guide. It does start at the beginning, but then it does take you through to the more complicated things, and it sort of shows you where to get the bits you really need when you want to get really complex, which is great. A lovely book, well written. It's done in a project form, which is even better. It says, oh, have you ever thought of doing this sort of thing? And if you did, try that. It's a really good idea. So it's not just like a tech book. You can actually read through it and learn. And what I particularly like, I looked at the original Amazon price, which was $27.99. I thought, well, that's a bit steep. And I looked at the Kindle version, that was $17.15. I thought, that's still a bit steep. And then I looked at something Joe Workman had written, and on his own website, which is called rapidweaverbook.com, I managed to buy both the book and the Kindle ebook version for $25.19.
Oh, very good.
So the book itself has reduced down to £14.44, which is just like percentage off, which is strange. But just if you just want both of them, it's £25.19, which is about 50% of the price. And it's a very, very, very good book if you want to use Rapid Weaver. And even if you just want to learn, I'd recommend Rapid Weaver for Mac users that want a guided hand into web building, because you can take what you've got and then you can start being clever once you've learnt the basics.
I need to have a wee lesson off you, Alex, to get me started in Rapid Weaver, because I've got a copy of it and I've never used it. So.
Oh, you can do some great things once you get in deep.
No, I'm sure you can.
Rapid Weaver's like Dreamweaver, except you do it when you're awake.
I haven't been exactly. I haven't been paddling. I taught myself Dreamweaver, but I was crap at it. It was awful. I worked out pull-down menus and then they never worked. So. so I guess I didn't. Eric, what have you got for us, pal?
I've got nothing, so I do have a couple of just quick Xbox tips for anyone who hasn't heard of these tips. Number one is... What?
That'll do.
Number one is, did you know that you can install games on the Xbox hard drive to save loading time?
Really?
Yes. Oh, see, I'm glad I mentioned this, because I thought you'd say, oh, of course we know that. But it took me a while to figure this out, even though I've known it for a while now. But when you put in a game DVD, you go to the main icon on the main tile, and you go to the game details. And right there will be a button that says install. And you give it like 5 minutes, it'll copy the whole game disc to the hard drive that's built in. And as long as you have a big enough hard drive. and then it will dramatically speed up loading times or practically reduce them. You still have to have the disk in the drive to play the game. That's for copy protection purposes, and that gets annoying. But it does really speed up the load time, and that helps. Second tip is for backing it up, because people forget that, you know, if talk about, you know, what happens if your house is broken into or something, someone steals your Xbox or the thing just breaks, the hard drive goes bad. You might lose all your saved game data, hundreds of hours potentially of saved games. So you have two options. One is if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber, there's a brand new thing I haven't tried yet, but it's like cloud backup for your saved games. That sounds pretty cool, but you have to pay. The other thing is if you stick a USB storage device of any type, it can be a generic thumb drive. It could be a hard drive. I did it a year ago when I had to migrate from a broken Xbox to a new one with a little hard drive. It did have to reformat the whole thing, so I had to have that totally clean drive. But it'll offload its data, and you can actually move saved games to and from a USB storage device. So that's a way you can back up your games as well. So those are my two little Xbox tips.
Excellent. Good pick, sir. Very good. Yeah, cool things can be tips, mate. Gaz does them on the Mac show, so that's no problem. I got two quickies, super quickies. First one, Dexter Season 7 is out there at the moment. If you're not a Dexter fan, you bloody well should be. They're superb, but you've got to start at Season 1 if you can't just jump in at 7. It's a fantastic story, and it's at Season 7 at the moment. And we've had Robert Lewis, is a good friend of the network, who's the producer of the show, and it's fantastic. They film it during the summer, and he's invited me out onto the set. He's invited Eric down on the set as well. We've just got to get out there. But I'm planning to go next year because 8 is going to be the last one. If you like it, then it's not on here in the UK at the moment, I don't think. But there are ways and means, of course. Not that I would know about those. And the other one that I've got into is Homeland. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray now, Series 1. And I have to say, I've kind of passed on this and never got the hype of it and that kind of stuff, and I've started watching the DVD, and I'm hooked. It's brilliant. If you haven't watched Homeland, you've got to watch Homeland. Really, really good. Those are my two picks. Homeland and Dexter Season 7. Oh. Right.
Dexter scares.
Dexter's brilliant. Dexter's...
I'm a wuss.
Brilliant.
Can you share where one would find it on the televisual these days, or would it be
it's on FX? It's on FX on Sky, yeah. I am Dexter, says Princel's Bagel. Wow, says Kachovnix. And could we do a British Tech Bash live from the Dexter set? He's the kind of guy I think would let us on there. When we started getting loads and loads of hits, the only thing I was thinking was that maybe he'd got one of the splash screens, you know, when Dexter switches his computer off dead quick. And it's come up with the British Tech Network site or something like that. But
wouldn't that be great?
I'm going to ask him if he'll do that in Season 8. That'd be really cool. But I've had an invitation down there in the summer. Come down, he'll take me around the set, show me everything. Got to get out to LA next year. Can't pass it up. So. Homeland is good as well. Yes,
it's on Netflix as well, by the way, in case anyone's wondering.
It's on Netflix and it's on news groups and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, no, I mean, Netflix, you can actually pay for... whatever it is, $5.99 a month or what?
Yeah, no, $5.99. And the other thing that you can do is if you get yourself something like Spotflux that spoofs your IP, then you can watch the American Netflix using your same account details, all for $5.99. No problem at all. And you get more newer versions of it on there as well, which is good. Which I don't think is illegal.
Spoofing your IP sounds like something a terrorist would do.
I don't think that's illegal, is it?
Well, you're getting unauthorized access to a network.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Did nobody tell you it was wrong, Ewan?
No, you see, I'm obsessed with Dexter, and I got to have it. But I know that the ways that I get it are wrong.
I'll back you 100%, mate.
I've got a bloke flies over from the States with a dodgy DVD every Sunday morning. Cost me a fortune.
Probably cheaper just to fly over and watch it, isn't it?
Where can we get a hold of you? Before I put myself any further in pup. Where can I get a hold of you, James?
You can get hold of me on the Twitter, which is SYZYGY Syzygy.
Thank you, mate. Where are you, Mr. Ian Burton?
Apptech.co.uk, APTK.
And if you need a programmer in C#, he's your man.
Thank you.
Alex, where are you, buddy?
I'm at Alex G. Fox on Twitter. You can also get me via Syzygy because he'll just forward my messages.
Absolutely.
And I program in B flat.
Thank you.
And Eric, where are you, mate?
ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-A-N.
Thank you very much. We'll be back again next week as normal. It'll be on Thursday night as normal. All the other shows are going to go back to Friday at the moment, unless something horrific happens next week. And then in 2 weeks' time, Mr. Lanigan's going to be running the asylum. So ooh, watch Uh-oh. Out.
Can we have him extradited over here?
See you next week.
Assuming that he's at his door in a moment.
Thanks for listening. Yeah.